Aloha and welcome to the Kauai Death Cafe. We're live today with Susan and Cynthia. Cynthia, hi. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How is everything this weekend, Susan? You doing good?
Still here.
She's still here, folks. I'm still here too. And we're glad to be here with you, Cynthia. Cynthia is a practicing lawyer at Kauai Estate Law. Cynthia, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm happy to be here. I graduated and passed the bar back in the 1990s, but I moved to Kauai in 2008, and that was when I was able to really pursue my passion, which is estate planning, probate, and trust law. I started the firm Kauai Estate Law. Back then, it was just me, and we've grown over the years, and my mission is for everyone on Kauai to have an estate plan so that things are easy for their loved ones after they go.
Nice. Well, that's a real conundrum for people here and everywhere, I think, you know?
Figuring out the law is challenging. Yeah.
Well, you can't take it with you, but you can make sure that people don't have quite as much of a mess.
Yeah.
You can make sure that your stuff goes where you want it to go and that you have the right people in charge of the process.
Really. It's important. So that's why we're glad you're here.
We were talking for a minute before we got on air, and you said if you don't take care of it, the state's got a free plan for you. So what happens if you don't take care of it?
Yeah, so people sometimes contact me, and they say, well, I'm coming to do my estate planning because I don't want my house or my stuff to go to the state when I die. And that's actually very, very rare. So if you don't do anything, the state has decided, and they've tried to, the legislature has crafted laws, and these are different in every state.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful if you move from state to state. But in Hawaii, for example, you know, if you pass away and you don't have a will or anything, your assets will go to your next of kin, your closest relatives in some shares or proportions. So your stuff will only go to the state if you have no spouse, no descendants, no children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, no living parents, no siblings, no nieces, no nephews, no uncles, no aunts, and no cousins. So you really have to be all alone in this world and have no will in order for anything to go to the state. But the plan that the state has put together for you, so where your assets go, you know, if you don't have a will, might or might not be what you want.
Yeah.
So the important thing is to look at that and understand that. And that's usually where we start with an estate plan with people is, well, what's going to happen right now? If you walk out of my office and you get hit by a bus, what's going to happen? And then if you don't like that, what do you want to change and how do you want to change it?
Yeah. Cool. So what she's saying is if you walk out of here and you're married to somebody but you haven't figured out your divorce yet, all your stuff is going to your spouse.
Well, or a good portion of it.
Even if you don't like them.
Even if you don't like them.
Right.
Yeah, and then, you see a lot of messy stuff like that. I was helping a friend do his estate planning, and he's like, I have to get divorced. And I'm like, you're married? He's been separated since 1993. And so we're trying to figure out how to pass these things to his descendants, and that person is in line first. So it's really important to get your palu palu paperwork done. That's what they call it around here.
Yeah. I mean, even if you have just an insurance policy or IRA accounts, a lot of times people, when they're young, they might name their parents as beneficiaries. You know, they get older, they get married, they name their spouse, then they get divorced, years pass, and they never go back and change the beneficiaries.
Yeah.
And then it's sometimes a surprise when we discover.
That would be a surprise. Yikes. So in line of estate planning, one of the kind of first things that people deal with is power of attorney, because you could just become incapacitated. But the power of attorney for legal is different than power of attorney for medical. And your medical power of attorney ends when you die.
Right. And so does your legal power of attorney.
Ah.
So this is a document that appoints people to deal with everything other than medical.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Your finances, your taxes, your property, and so forth, if you're incapacitated. Or if you simply need help dealing with it.
Yeah.
Right?
So that's part of estate planning is...
Right.
Incapacitated, even if you're not dead yet.
Right. So we generally provide as part of the planning everything that you need to cover everything if you're incapacitated and or after you die. So medical directives, which we've talked about in this show before, the financial power of attorney, mm-hmm. the form where you designate who you want to deal with your funeral arrangements and what happens to your body and what kind of wishes you want in that respect.
There's a form for that?
There is. It's called the Authorization for Disposition of Remains.
Oh. But
we colloquially call it the funeral directive.
And that's part of what happens if you do the estate planning. You have all those different forms.
We can provide you with that form. Yeah.
Or at least let us know what we need to know.
And help you fill it out, right? So
yeah,
it's
cool.
You can name your people and you can also spell out what you want. You can be as detailed and complete as you want, or you can simply say, I want to be cremated and have my ashes scattered. Something very simple. Or you can leave it up to your agents. You know, if you don't really have any strong wishes and you want them to do whatever they want, you can do that too.
Nice.
That's nice to know.
Yeah. There's lots of paperwork. I think we have an authorization for disposition in the mortuary packet. Mm-hmm. And so some of them say authorization to bury, and then another one says authorization to cremate. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the same document, or would that be?
I think maybe that's a document that the next of kin or the person signs,
yes,
at the after you're already gone to,
yes,
make it happen. So what our document does is it specifies who has the right to sign that document for you.
Okay.
So if you have five kids and one of them lives in Bhutan and one of them's in the military, so you don't even know where they're going to be.
Yes.
You know, if you pass away and you haven't specified, the mortuary, I believe, has to contact all of your children and get,
absolutely,
them all to sign off or agree, mm-hmm, on what's going to happen. It might, mm-hmm, be difficult.
Yeah.
So you might want to specify just one or two of them to be the ones who have control of that.
Right.
And you can do friends, doesn't it?
You can do
family.
Anyone you want.
Anyone,
yeah.
Yeah.
They just have to be named in the document.
Right.
All right.
And you can put down whatever you want for your wishes. There are two rules. It has to be legal, and there has to be enough money in your estate to pay for it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So if you want to be buried in a Rolls Royce, you better have enough money to cover that, or it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and if you want psilocybin mushrooms to gobble you up, you're against the law.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Oh, darn. I want to know about TODs. Transfers on death.
Sure. So that's one way that you can control, you know, who's going to get your assets. So many different types of assets can be held in Hawaii as TOD or POD, pay on death, transfer on death, same thing, sort of. So you can have bank accounts that are TOD, where it's your bank account, 100%. You haven't added anyone to that account. They can't walk into the bank tomorrow and take money out while you're still alive. But once you die, it transfers to them.
So, and do they have to show up with a death certificate?
Yes.
They have to show up with...
Sure. They have to prove that you're truly gone. Mm-hmm. And of course, because it's pay on death, they can't access that account while you're alive. So they can't help you to pay bills. That's why you need that power of attorney for whoever you want to deal with it while you're alive.
Mm. And with property transfer on death, it's the same thing. It's like it's your property, and then when you die... It's,
yes,
transferred to them, but they just need a death certificate.
So, yes, I forget. I think it was a little over 10 years ago, maybe. I'm not too sure of the time, but Hawaii adopted the transfer on death deed, or in some places it's called a beneficiary deed. So just like you can name a beneficiary for your bank account, for your stock accounts, for your IRAs, and so forth, you can also name a death beneficiary for your property. You sign something called a transfer on death deed, sign it while you're alive, and it has to be recorded at the Bureau of Conveyances in order to be valid. It has to be recorded before you die. But most people will sign them. They're recorded usually within a couple of days. And then when you pass, your beneficiaries have to file an affidavit. We can prepare that for them. It's very simple, with your death certificate attached. and they become the owners of the property.
Oh, but so there's still a few steps.
But it doesn't have to go through probate. It's very, very simple and very inexpensive for them to claim the property. Basically, it's the same process that if you were joint tenants on a property with someone and one of the two passed away, you're going to need to file something with the Bureau to show that that person is now gone.
And you're the independent owner.
And you're the
now.
One owner, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's the same process as that. But the benefit is while you're alive, you know, they don't have to agree if you want to sell the property. They're not entitled to share in the proceeds. And you can change it. It's revocable, and you can change it anytime you want. You can borrow against your property. You can sell your property all by yourself. And if you change your mind, take them off. There are a few things that make that not work in every situation. It can be good if you have one person that you want to get the property, or a couple of people, few people. And then if one of those people dies, you want it to go to one or more specific people, and all the people are over 18 and they are all able to manage and handle property. If you have minor beneficiaries or disabled beneficiaries, or if you want it to go to, you know, my two kids, but if either one of them dies, you want their share to pass down to their kids who are, say, minors, that's not going to work as well for a transfer on death deed. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to want to set up a trust or some other arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's all kinds of trusts for that.
Yep.
All those generation
trusts. Yeah, what about
trusts?
I mean, they don't seem that straightforward.
A lot of people ask me about trust. There's a lot of misunderstandings about trusts. And you know, a lot of what we do in estate planning, a lot of times people think estate planners, oh, they write wills and trusts.
Yeah.
That's what people think we do. We write documents. We create documents for people. It's actually a really small part of what we do. The biggest part of what we do, biggest parts, I would say, are education.
Yeah.
Answering questions like this. What's the difference between a will and a trust? And things like that. And explaining the processes. And just helping people through the planning process,
right,
to get to the documents at the end. Helping people, a lot of times people put it off. I don't know. I haven't decided exactly who I want to get my stuff. Or I don't even know where to begin.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of questions. And how do I pick who's going to be my executor?
Yeah.
And stuff. And so we provide a guide through that process. We help you get through that process. We lay it all out kind of in easy steps and help
some
you to
people,
figure it out.
Some people have a hard time making decisions, I bet, so you have to kind of spell it out for them.
I think people have a lot less difficulty if they have a bit of guidance. A bit of guidance, you know?
Yeah.
What is the difference between a trust and a will, now that you brought that up?
Sure. So there are about 4 to 5 different ways that property and assets can go to other people when you die. As I said, you can't take it with you, so it's got to go to somebody. So if there's a beneficiary on the account, the beneficiary will get it. Life insurance will go to the beneficiary. If there's a joint owner, sometimes if it's with survivorship, they'll get the property. And a trust is another way, so of passing assets. And then the final way is if you haven't provided for any of these other ways, the assets will pass according to your will, if you have one, or that free plan that we talked about where the state says who gets what if you have no will or anything. So a trust is a way to avoid that probate process by putting your assets into a trust of which you're in charge while you're alive. You control it. You hold the legal title. You can do pretty much anything you want. This is with a revocable living trust. But when you die, instead of that asset being owned by you individually and becoming part of your probate estate, which has to go through the court process, it just your successor trustee, whoever you've named, will take over. And then they'll do whatever you say to do in the trust document with your assets.
They'll disburse it.
Yeah, or in fact, they'll disburse it. They'll usually gather all your assets, pay your bills and expenses, and then either distribute the assets to whoever you say gets them, $10,000 to charity, $10,000 to your best friend, my Porsche to so-and-so, and the rest to, you know, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes they'll be directed to hold on to the assets and keep them in trust. Maybe if you have a beneficiary who's a minor or who's disabled, who's receiving some type of government benefits, you know, yeah. So if they inherited the money, they would lose their benefits. Mm-hmm. So you have somebody to hold the money for them, buy them things as they need, pay for your kids' support, pay for education, until your kids or your minor beneficiaries get to whatever age where they can handle the assets themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Interesting.
That's a lot. I could see how you wouldn't know exactly what to prescribe to someone until you've really understood the depth of the things that they own and the complications of their relationships and stuff like that. Yeah.
One of the biggest questions we get when people call up to make an appointment is, what should I bring, or what do I need to have? What do I need to do before the appointment? It's really pretty simple. So you can come in cold with nothing, and we can guide you as we meet. You don't need to have a lot of legal documents. If you have previously made a will or a trust, sure, you should bring that. If you have real estate, in other states especially, if you can get a hold of the deed, that's helpful. In Hawaii, we can get all your deeds. We can find all your deeds. We can get them online for you and find out exactly how you hold title to your property. But it's a good idea to have a list.
Yeah.
You know, what do I have? It's really good for everybody to sit down and make an inventory of, you know, what different things do I have? How are the assets titled? Is it just me? Do I hold it jointly with somebody else? Is it TOD or POD? Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a list of the people that you care about that you want to provide for. And they may be some of the same people or different people. The people you want to put in charge of things. And that's probably the most important thing that people have to decide. Who's going to be in charge?
Who do you trust?
Who do you trust? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oui.
All those decisions.
It's a lot.
Good thing I don't have very much.
Well, and I see that you could make some of these decisions early on, and then you'd have to amend them or, you know, something like
for
that.
Sure.
Because you get mad at somebody. Or
they die.
Yeah.
Yeah. It happens a lot. And everything is changed. Almost everything we do for people, there are a few types of advanced planning for very wealthy people who need to worry about estate taxes that might not be as changeable. But most of the things we do, you can change them anytime.
Yeah.
And it's better to put something in place, usually, that you might have to come back and change later.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have talked a lot on this show about the dying process and what a person goes through, and, you know, from diagnosis, or, you know, some people don't have a diagnosis, so they don't know. It's all very sudden,
right?
Okay, and so of course people think, oh, I better make a will in case something sudden happens. But it's also a good idea to do your estate planning, even if, you know, as I think most people, you die more slowly of illness or deterioration.
Involved,
exactly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, frankly, if you get a diagnosis of some bad form of cancer, who wants to be worrying about the will
estate
and the trust?
Planning, yeah.
You got other things to think about.
That's
right?
Making decisions in duress.
Yeah. Yeah. And depending on how the treatment goes, you may be on some pretty heavy duty medications,
mm-hmm.
and that can lead to issues questioning whether you really had the mental capacity to make those documents, especially if you're leaving somebody out who would otherwise be in.
Yeah.
So doing it in advance has a lot of advantages. You can always go back, and it's easier to make small changes at the last minute than it is to do the whole thing at the last minute.
So this brings me to a question that I wonder about and don't understand. So forgive me if I ask this and it sounds wrong or weird, but there's a mark where if people have to go into care and they own things that maybe they can't afford the care, and then I don't know who comes back and tries to kind of like take your house, and but you don't have enough money to pay for the care, but you really don't have enough money to pay for your house either. You know, this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking about protecting your assets or planning for needing to have Medicaid,
yes.
to have the state pay for long-term care.
Yes.
There are basically three ways to pay for long-term care. One is you pay out of your own money. If you have $1 million sitting in the bank, you can just pay for it. The second one is long-term care insurance. You can get insurance that will pay for it or part of it. And you can actually get that coupled with a life insurance policy as well. So if you don't use it for long-term care, you never end up needing care.
It can cash out. There
can be a life insurance benefit. And then the third way is if you don't have either one of those and if you meet the income and asset thresholds, the state will pay for your care through the Medicaid program. People have a lot of questions about that because there's some, they hear stories, you know, my friend lost everything. They had to sell everything before they could get the state to pay for their care. All their hard-earned work and the legacy that they'd built up for their families was gone. And they want to protect against that. Well, in Hawaii, it's fairly difficult.
Yeah.
But there are a few things that can be done. So we used to put assets into irrevocable trusts. And if you did that 5 years before you needed care, those assets were not counted. They weren't looked at by the state, and they would go to your family. It's very difficult. You can't really do that in exactly the same way anymore. Mm. You can give assets to your kids. So, you know, if you have your primary home, they're not going to look at that. They're not going to count that against you and have it stop you from getting Medicaid. If you have a spouse or minor children or disabled children living in the house, they can just stay there and nothing will happen and you can get your care. If you have second or third properties, you know, if you have additional real estate, those things have to be sold and the money's spent most of the time. You know, a lot of these things that I'm saying, like, this is the way it is, and most of the time, there are exceptions to every law and every rule, and this is why it's important to have somebody go over your specific situation. But then what will happen is if you don't have a spouse or kids living in the home, if you're the only one and you move out, you go to a care home, then after a period of time, if they will evaluate your situation and determine if they think it's likely that you can return home. Mm. And if it's not likely that you're ever going to return home, then they may put a lien on your property. Now, they won't take the property. They won't sell the property. They will just put a lien on it.
What does that mean then?
It means that if and when the property is ever sold, the state will be paid back for the cost of your care. Now, the state will be paid back less than you would pay yourself for your care because they have a reduced rate that Medicaid gets paid and pays and reimbursed at. But it can add up if you're in care for a long period of time. But the only way around that is to transfer your property outright. Basically, give it away. Give it to your children, your friends. Give it away and not retain, you know, and control over it. And then 5 years later, it won't count. But there's another loophole or exception that works for a lot of people, which is if you have an adult child who is living in your home with you for 2 years prior to you needing to go to the nursing home and providing help and assistance for you so you don't need care quite as soon, then you can transfer your home to that person at any time with no penalty and they won't put a lien on it. It's called the caretaker child exception. There's another less used exception if you actually own your property together with a sibling as well. So if you've owned it with a sibling for at least a year, you can transfer it to them.
And then a husband can transfer, or a husband and a wife can transfer to each other as well?
Correct, but the nursing home's going to look at anything owned by either spouse.
Ah, by the whole couple itself.
However, some people do get divorced
to
protect their assets.
Wow.
And that can, it can be difficult if the spouse that needs the care has dementia or isn't able to consent to things legally.
Yeah.
They would have to have an attorney appointed to represent them and so forth. But sometimes people
actually do
get
that
divorced.
Paperwork. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you for tuning in to KKCR. We're talking about estate planning, which translates to a lot of people as palu palu paperwork.
I like that. I hadn't heard that term before.
Yeah. That's what Hawaiians call paperwork they don't want to do. So I like to use that term because it softens it for me anyways. I spent last week doing that palu palu paperwork. We're going to do a little bit of legal identification and take a break. We'll be back on air in a few minutes. Thank you. Aloha. Welcome back to the Kauai Death Cafe. We're here today with Cynthia, who is an estate planner. She works at Kauai Estate Law with a couple of other attorneys, and they help with planning our deaths, essentially, or what to do with all our stuff.
Yeah, more like what do we do with our stuff?
How to leave a legacy.
How to leave your legacy. One of the things that is really hairy around here with deeds and stuff like that is descendants. You know, deeds are different here in Kauai, or here on, in the state of Hawaii, due to like the mahele and those sorts of things from back in the day. Do you see a lot of complication with the way that deeds are written in that aspect?
A couple of things that tend to come up are situations where, you know, property's basically been passed down more or less informally for several generations. You know, great-grandpa passed away, and, you know, grandpa and his two brothers took care of the property, and one of them lived there, and the other one's, you know, whatever. And then they passed on, and it went to their kids. But nobody ever did anything legally. We've just been living on the property and taking care of it. You know, it's our kuleana. Mm-hmm. And then somebody comes in and says, well, I've got this interest in this property, and, you know, me and cuz, we're not getting along, and how do we deal with that? So there can be sometimes 50 or 100 different owners of this property over time, and it's never been formalized. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a really big process of going out and finding out and tracing the family trees and figuring out, you know, who the owners are. Maybe somebody's really lived on the property and taken care of it and paid all the taxes, and they want to have it, and they're willing to talk to these other people. There are attorneys who specialize in this. There's one on Oahu specifically who has worked with a lot of Hawaiian and other families to sort out their property issues.
And that's more of real estate law.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What, who, you mind sharing the name of
his
that
name
attorney?
Is Andrew Sprenger, Sprenger. Mm-hmm. He's in Kaneohe.
Okay. So he's in Oahu on Kaneohe.
Yeah. But he comes over here, and he's a really nice guy, and he's great to work with.
Oh, that's good. That's
easygoing.
That's great, because it's a high stress situation when you're dealing with that kind of stuff, you know?
It is, yeah. And there are other issues. You know, sometimes people own property on Kauai or in Hawaii with other people. You know, they own property jointly. Yeah. They might not have anything in writing about everybody's rights and responsibilities. And you might not even know what's going to happen to your share of the property when you pass. Is it going to go to your kids? Is it going to pass according to your will? Is it going to go to the other owners? And so we can help people to figure that, those kinds of things out.
Yeah, get it out of the gray area.
Yeah.
Wow. So everything sounds expensive.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. Depending on your situation, a simple will and a power of attorney and medical directives can be very reasonable. Mm-hmm. You may not even need a will if you're a single person and you have two adult kids and you want everything to go to your kids when you die. That's going to happen. Whether you, you know,
they're the
even
next
if you don't
in
have
line.
A will. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And there are a couple of good ways to keep the cost down. Things like transfer on death deeds and naming beneficiaries on all your accounts.
Yeah.
And then there's also a program for people over 60. Is it the Agency on Elderly Affairs provides for people, anyone over 60 can go to the legal aid office and they can get a will, power of attorney, and advanced health care directives prepared for free.
Ooh. Plug to the agency of elder
You don't have to meet
affairs.
Any income okay. or asset requirements if you're over 60. Now, there are
That's
things
great.
That they won't do. They can't advise you or help you with trusts or some kinds of deeds and things. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they do the transfer on death deeds or not, but you can inquire.
Yeah. That's great. And then I guess based on what you really have is really going to tell you what you need. So in listening to this program, you may not need all of these things that we're talking about. We're going really fast and we're giving a lot of information, but I think what you're really trying to say is don't be discouraged to make your list and bring it into the office and just have a, a conversation about it.
Sure. And, you know, sometimes there are people who don't have a lot, especially here on Kauai, I think as everybody knows, there are a lot of people who are land rich and cash poor.
Yeah.
Quite a few, you know, of our clients. And sometimes for those people, it's not an expensive proposition to plan their estate. But other times, you know, you may have a situation like if you have a beneficiary who has special needs, who's yeah. receiving Medicaid and supplemental security income, HUD housing, other types of government benefits.
Yeah.
And the only way that you can help them and leave assets for them to use, leave them a place to live, would be through a trust. And, you know, if you're in that situation and you have a need for that sort of thing, but you really can't afford it, we'll work with you. I mean, yeah. at Kauai Estate Law, we'll work with you. We take those kinds of things into account and can cut you a break or set up a payment plan or whatever would work.
So this law, the thing about it is so if you died and you didn't have a will, but your next of kin were there and they were your adult children, it still has a probate period, right? The will is sort of helping to avoid the probate period?
Or the trust?
Actually, no, because a will also has to go through probate.
Okay.
Something a lot, the word probate, people, what's probate? Do I need a probate? Probate sounds bad.
You have to probate this.
It sounds difficult and expensive, and a lot of people have heard a lot of horror stories about probate.
Yeah.
In some places, they're true. Probate in California is awful. Right? Probate in California is very expensive, difficult. It takes a long time. There are a lot of rules and statutes and regulations and notices and payments that have to be made to attorneys and to your executor. And in Hawaii, fortunately, we have a much simpler system. Mm. We have something called the Uniform Probate Code that allows probates much of the time, not always, but to be done informally. We prepare some papers. The executor will sign the papers and then we'll file them with the court. We do it all electronically now. And you can be issued a document called Letters Testamentary or Letters of Administration, which allows you to carry out
to
the deceased
it.
Person's wishes. And you don't have to keep going back to court, and you don't have to pay all of these. The fees are much smaller here than in places like California. But that process has to happen if you don't have any will or trust or anything. And also, if all you have is a will and you have assets passing according to your will. If your assets include any real estate, now, this wouldn't include real estate with a transfer and death deed because that's just going to go to those people. But if you have real estate that would pass according to your will, or if your other assets that pass according to your will are over $100,000, then you have to go through the court probate process, even if you have a will. Because your will needs to be submitted to the court, the judge needs to look at it, or the registrar needs to look at it, make sure it meets all the requirements for a will. Mm-hmm. Put a pin in that, because people ask if they can make their own wills. I want to come back to that.
Yes.
And that, you know, usually, 9 times out of 10, the will is fine. The court stamps it, and you move forward. But you have to go through that process. Also, if you have a will, the court wants to make sure that anyone who would have inherited your assets if you didn't have a will has an opportunity to look at that will and challenge it if they want to, if they think that you didn't really make it or you didn't know what you were doing when you made it, right? So those people have to get notice.
Is that like a public announcement in the paper or something?
It can be in the paper, or you can simply send them a copy of the will. Ah. The attorney can, if we can find them, we can send it to them. But then this is another reason why people sometimes make trusts or transfer on death deeds or to try to avoid the probate process, because they don't know where some of their relatives are who would be entitled to notice, or they don't want them to get notice for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. They don't want to stir the pot.
So after you sort of exercise the Uniform Probate Code and you get the letter, then you take the letter paired with the will, let's say down to the county tax office, and then you can transfer your real estate that way?
So you would take, you. We would help you to transfer the real estate.
Oh,
we
okay.
would help you to prepare
it has to
the,
be
deeds,
all the deeds.
But
written.
You would take the letters to a bank.
To the banks, okay.
And say, I am the executor of the estate. I've been blessed by the court and appointed by the court, so give me the money.
There you go. Right? Okay.
Put the money in my name as executor. I promise that I will give it to the people that are spelled out in the will.
Yep, and then it's
this is why it's important to pick people that you trust. You know, people ask me, how much power does my executor have? Can they just grab all the money and take it for themselves?
They could.
They have the power to do that. They don't have the legal right to do that.
Yeah.
Just like the CEO of a company could take all the money for themselves. That's embezzlement.
Yeah.
They could be charged and they could go to prison for doing that. But they could do it in the meantime. And if they spend it all, it could be hard to get it back.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, sticky. One of the things, so can you make your own will?
Yes. In fact, I have a blog that I haven't written in years, but one of my last posts was during COVID, and I posted that people couldn't get out, they didn't want to come to an attorney, and they were worried at that time. What if I get COVID? What if I die? And so one way is you can make what we call a holographic will.
Ah.
And that needs to be 100% in your own handwriting.
Yeah.
You can't type it on your computer and then sign it. It has to be handwritten out. The material portions have to be in your own handwriting, signed and dated. And it has to indicate that you intend for it to be your will. And so if you have a typed will, you need to have two witnesses.
Okay.
You don't need a notary. But you do need two witnesses. Now, what if you have a notary? That notary can count as one of the witnesses. So, you need to have two witnesses. They can be almost anyone, as long as they're over 18.
And not related to you.
They can be a person who's named in the will. They can be related to you. Now, there are pitfalls. If you leave everything to your best friend and you name them the executor and they're also the witness, that can raise more questions about the validity
if
of the
will. If someone wanted to challenge it.
You might want to have, you know, we provide disinterested witnesses in our office for that reason. But you can make your own will. There are, of course, a lot of programs, willandtrust.com and all these legal Zoom. You can go on and you can find a form and make your own will. There are pitfalls, you know. There have been horrible situations. Most of the time it's not horrible. If there are problems with the will, if they don't have witnesses, or if you accidentally disinherited your spouse, which I've seen happen.
Oh, gosh.
A person who did not intend to disinherit their spouse. And fortunately, we caught it before they passed away, so we were able to fix it. But those kinds of problems can be fixed, but it tends to be very expensive and difficult and a big hassle. So if you're going to make your own will, I recommend that you at least get it reviewed by an attorney.
Yeah.
A lot of attorneys don't want to. They're like, it's going to be harder for me and take me more time to look over this will and fix all the problems than it would be to do one from scratch.
Yeah. So in writing a holographic will, I guess I could see people doing that before they go skydiving or before you start this chemo treatment or something like that. What could you write who takes your kids in that situation?
There's a separate statute. There's a separate
minor
thing
children.
For who's the guardian of your children. So both parents would, of course, have the right. So if you're one parent and the other parent is alive and hasn't been declared unfit, they would have the right to take the kids. But let's say you both go heli skiing or something, and you can nominate who you would like to be the guardians for your children. And that document should be notarized. And it should very clearly spell out, you know, if we are unable to care for our children for any reason, these are the people that we want to do that.
If children have an estranged father, and, you know, that's who they automatically go to if the mother suddenly died, but the father hadn't seen him in like 10 years, they still go automatically to that person legally.
If the father is available and able and willing to take them, then they would have the right to. This is getting into issues of family law more and custody that I'm not 100% up on, but there are ways to challenge someone's custody. Grandparents can sometimes step in and say, this isn't in the courts are most concerned in all instances with the best interests of the child.
Right.
But the interests of the parents, in this case the father, do carry some weight.
Sure.
And so it's a balancing act for the courts.
Yeah.
But I tell people, sometimes people come in and they're divorced and they're, the other parent hasn't been seen or heard from in quite a while, and I say, look, you nominate who you want. I can't guarantee that they're not going to go to their other parent, but if something happens to them, if the other parent can't or doesn't want to take them, you've nominated someone and they haven't, well, your choice is going to be the next person in line.
Yeah. I had a situation where a hospice patient had written on their medical power of attorney who they wanted to take care of their kids because they didn't understand how to actually create a guardianship situation, you know, and also didn't understand that that medical power of attorney ended, you know, when he died. So the intention was there, but, you know, and so then the children were just sort of lost out in the ether because foster care didn't just seem to come right in and take over or anything like that. So there's some sticky stuff there, you know.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with minors, family law. So we deal with family law for that, guys. Family law for children, real estate attorney for property, and you for our estate planning, which brings it all together. I assume you have great referrals for family law stuff too. If
some, you know, we have a real shortage of attorneys here on Kauai. I mean, in some areas, in many areas.
Yeah.
Almost in most areas. You know, we have such a shortage of attorneys in Hawaii that a law was recently passed that allows attorneys for as far back as I know, an attorney who was licensed and practicing for many years in any other state couldn't just come to Hawaii and do what we call wave in and practice here because, you know, they've proven themselves in another state. Many states have that, but Hawaii didn't. Mm. You had to take the bar in Hawaii. But the attorney shortage has gotten to such an extent that they're now allowing out-of-state attorneys to come in, provided that they go to work for certain government agencies like the prosecutor's office and forth, because they're so short on attorneys here in Hawaii. Many of our estate planning attorneys and other attorneys here on Kauai have retired. They're getting to that age. So 4 or 5 of them have retired in the last 6 or 7 years. And we really do have quite a shortage.
Wow. Shortage of attorneys, and as far as a shortage of everything else.
I was just going to say we have a shortage of everything on Kauai because it's a little island.
It is. Okay, so who listens that used to live here and they grew up here and they became an attorney and they're passionate about law? It's a great retirement to be an estate planner.
It's the best area of the law. I love it because we're helping people. We're really helping people to solve their problems. They come in, and after a few meetings, they're like, wow, this is so much easier than I thought it would be. You know, I really feel better. I really have peace of mind. That's our goal.
Yeah.
I think a lot of areas of the law, you're dealing with contentious people who are fighting, and often at the end of it, nobody's happy. I used to clerk for a judge, and he used to say he knew he'd made the right decision when nobody was happy.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Really.
What do you think, Susan?
I'm in overwhelm, to tell you the truth. I've just...
You did it, Cynthia.
Yeah.
No, we want to make it simpler.
No, but that it's good to understand all the questions that I have to answer for myself and preparing for...
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I said, I'm going to make an appointment.
There's one other thing that people often ask me about, how to simplify things. How do I simplify things, you know, for my loved ones? And my joke is, well, the first thing you can do is have one child.
Right.
Because if you have more than one, they might fight or you might have issues between them. And if you have none, well, then it's not so easy to decide who to leave your stuff to. Have one. But if you're already over that, and you can't change that situation. You know, getting rid of your stuff and things, Swedish death cleaning and all that, going through your stuff. I just recently learned of a woman who runs a business here on Kauai that helps people to actually organize and clean up and stuff. And it's not like she comes through like a whirlwind and throws everything away, but she works with you to help to clean up and organize. Her business is called Organize My Mess.
Nice.
So that's one of the things that you can do is organize your things and just get a handle on what you have. Some of the more oddball assets that people have, like, oh, I have 3 savings bonds, or, you know, my daddy passed me 5 shares of HECO stock.
There's
that kind of thing. You can clean up those kinds of things.
Yeah. Wow. Well,
yeah, that's a goal, to get everything in order and then I've talked to a few people knowing that you were going to be on the show who said, oh, yeah, I've taken care of all of that.
Oh, and good for them.
Yeah, and they were kind of like, I'd like to know how they feel after they listen to the show, if they, because, like, there are so many subtleties and nuances, and if they really now can say, oh, yeah, I've taken care of everything. Yeah. But it's good to know that there is someone, if nothing else, to just look at your paperwork.
Right.
And let you know if it's good or not.
Do I have another minute? 1 minute?
Yeah, we do. We've got 5 minutes
Sorry.
Left.
Because one other thing that often comes up is people ask about their parents. You know, they want to know, geez, you know, I want to know, I wonder if mom and dad have done this. But of course, they don't want to bring it up. Don't want to seem like the greedy child who's just waiting for the parents to die and leave their stuff, but they're really concerned about what they're going to be left with or how it's going to go after their parents die. And that can be a sticky subject, but it can be a very important conversation for families to have. Sometimes if the kids are of a certain age, you know, 40, 50, they can bring up the subject by saying, you know, hey, we're doing our estate planning for our kids. We're just wondering, did you do this? And our estate planner has asked us, are we going to inherit? And you don't have to tell us if you don't want to, but it just let us know if you've taken care of it. And if not, can we help you to do that?
So the reason that you as an estate planner would ask a client my age if I was going to have some kind of beneficiary coming from my parents, is that so that I could assign it to my children or something?
Maybe,
like that?
And it might depend on the size of the asset. Boy, we didn't even touch on estate tax planning, which isn't an issue for most people, because if an individual's estate is under $5.5 million in Hawaii, you don't have to worry about estate taxes. And if you're married, you're total overall estate can be up to almost $11 million before you have to worry. But sometimes people may not be in that situation, but they come in, maybe they come in because they know they might inherit. You know, their parents are very old and their parents have a large estate and they might inherit several $1 million and they want to know if this is going to be a problem. Well, it may or may not be depending on how the parents have left it for them.
Yeah.
If they've left it in a certain kind of trust, they may not have to worry about it being taxable. But if they're going to get a big check and they add it to what they already have, then they may be in a taxable situation. Mm. Sometimes if the parents are still alive, we can fix that. We can help the younger generation by helping the parents to do things a little bit differently.
Right. That's another big can of worms.
The conversation seems to be a big can of worms for a lot of people.
Right. Another common question is, after they've done it all, should we give copies of this to our kids? Should we tell our kids about this, or our beneficiaries or our executors? That's a personal question. It depends on your situation, your people, your estate, whether you're likely to change it, how old you are, what your situation is.
Is there a place that this stuff gets filed? Like you go down and you give a copy to the county?
Most of it, no. Most of it is private documents.
Yeah.
Deeds get filed, transfer on death deeds get filed. But while the people who made the documents are still alive, for the most part, it's their private document. And one advantage of doing trust, for example, is you keep it private.
Mm-hmm.
The nature of your estate and who your beneficiaries are don't become a public record.
So we just have to find that mysterious business card from the attorney's office and call. Do you have any documents on file?
Yeah, we do tell people to make sure that their loved ones know where to find their documents rather than necessarily what's in them.
Right.
Because, of course, the medical directives, and maybe you had this discussion about who do you give your medical directives to? Your doctor, the people who are named in there?
Your refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. Your refrigerator, yeah.
Give it to your
couple copies in your purse.
Yeah, right.
So I did do an advanced directive the other day through palliative care, and they scan the whole thing in. And so the doctors in your network are aware of your medical advanced directives in that network. But that means, you know, nothing outside of the house, but at least
there is a registry. There are two companies that keep national registries of healthcare directives. Mm-hmm. We work with one of them, and for our clients, we'll upload their documents to the registry if they want to, only for the healthcare stuff.
And it helps if you're traveling outside of your state and jurisdiction,
yes,
is what I kind of understand.
Right.
and it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah, they give a little card that you can carry that identifies you as being in this registry. You can also put useful information on that, like contact information and some medical information, allergies and things that...
You get a tattoo.
There's your tattoo.
Get a tattoo. Yeah.
Well, I'm so glad you came to join us today, Cynthia. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
We had plenty to talk about, and we'll have to come up with some questions about how to deal with the tax situation when you die and before you die. And oh my gosh, that's a whole nother show.
Well, I don't think we have enough money. I don't know about you, but I'm not in the tax in the. If
in
you
the
have to have $5 million, I don't think it's a concern.
Well, I mean, if you start looking at appreciating assets, you don't have $5 million now, but by the time you die, Henry, you know, like your property could grow and appreciate. You know, anything could happen.
There are, how much your property's worth?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Your equity, the value of the property minus anything you owe on it. But, you know, as people get older, their mortgages get paid off, and the properties are going, as we know, crazy
That's
on
crazy.
Hawaii. Oh,
yeah. Silly. I mean, you saw a 40% increase here just in COVID. So anything could happen.
And there's the other issue, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know a lot of millionaires who can't pay. Buy groceries.
Yeah, because we're too busy trying to scrape it for taxes.
Exactly. And then there are property tax issues that come into play when someone dies. And also, if you sell a property after someone dies, how much get capital gains tax you're going to pay. All of these issues come into play.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to take it out with Taylor Swift's Anti-Hero. This is actually a song about estate planning. Yeah. Even though Susan's gagging. Love you, everybody. We will see you next week, Sunday, noon, Kauai Death Cafe.